for a way out. For his mother, his littermates, his pack. Searching, searching, and never finding. Behind the trees, the walls rose. Piles of dead man rock that loomed about this speck of living wood. Speckled gray they rose, and moss-spotted, yet thick and strong, and higher than any wolf could hope to leap. Cold iron and splintery wood closed off the only holes through the piled stones that hemmed them in. His brother would stop at every hole and bare his fangs in rage, but the ways stayed closed. He had done the same the first night and learned it was no good. Snarls would open no paths here. Circling the walls would not push them back. Lifting a leg and marking the trees would keep no men away. The world had tightened around them, but beyond the walled wood still stood the great gray caves of Man Rock. Winterfell, he remembered. The sun coming to him suddenly. Beyond its sky-tall man cliffs, the true world was calling. And he knew he must answer or die. Arya. They traveled dawn to dusk, past woods and orchards and neatly tended fields, through small villages, crowded market towns, and stout holdfasts. Come dark, they would make camp and eat by the light of the red sword. The men took turns standing watch. Arya would glimpse firelight flickering through the trees from the camps of other travelers. There seemed to be more camps every night and more traffic on the King's Road by day. Morn, noon, and night they came, old folks and little children, big men and small ones, barefoot girls, and women with babes at their breasts. Some drove farm wagons or bumped along in the back of ox carts. More rode, draft horses, ponies, mules, donkeys, anything that would walk or run or roll. One woman led a milk cow with a little girl on its back. Arya saw a smith pushing a wheelbarrow with his tools inside, hammers and tongs, and even an anvil. A little while later, a different man with a different wheelbarrow. Only inside this one were two babies in a blanket. Most came on foot, with their goods on their shoulders, and weary, weary looks upon their faces. They walked south, toward the city, toward King's Landing, and only 1 in 100 spared so much as a word for Yoren and his charges, travelling north. She wondered why no one else was going the same way as them. Many of the travellers were armed. Arya saw daggers and dirks, scythes and axes, and here and there a sword. Some had made clubs from tree limbs or carved knobby staffs. They fingered their weapons and gave lingering looks at the wagons as they rolled by. Yet in the end, they let the column pass. 30 was too many, no matter what they had in those wagons.
"Look with your eyes," Sirio had said. "Listen with your ears."
One day, a madwoman began to scream at them from the side of the road.
"Fools! They'll kill you, fools!"
She was scarecrow thin, with hollow eyes and bloody feet. The next morning, a sleek merchant on a grey mare reined up by Yoren and offered to buy his wagons and everything in them for a quarter of their worth. "It's war. They'll take what they want. You'll do better selling to me, my friend." Yoren turned away with a twist of his crooked shoulders and spat. Arya noticed the first grave that same day, a small mound beside the road, dug for a child. A crystal had been set in the soft earth, and Lummi wanted to take it until the bull told him he'd better leave the dead alone. A few leagues farther on, Praed pointed out more graves, a whole row freshly dug. After that, a day hardly passed without one. One time Arya woke in the dark, frightened for no reason she could name. Above, the red sword shared the sky with 500,000 stars. The night seemed oddly quiet to her. though she could hear Yoren's muttered snores, the crackle of the fire, even the muffled stirrings of the donkeys. Yet somehow it felt as though the world were holding its breath, and the silence made her shiver. She went back to sleep, clutching Needle. Come morning, when Praed did not awaken, Arya realized that it had been his coughing she had missed. They dug a grave of their own then, burying the sellsword where he'd slept. Yoren stripped him of his valuables before they threw the dirt on him. One man claimed his boots, another his dagger. His mail shirt and helm were parcelled out. His longsword Yoren handed to the bull.
Arms like yours, might be, you can learn to use this, he told him.
A boy called Tarba tossed a handful of acorns on top of Praed's body so an oak might grow to mark his place. That evening, they stopped in a village at an ivy-covered inn. Yoren counted the coins in his purse and decided they had enough for a hot meal.
We'll sleep outside, same as ever, but they've got a bathhouse here. If any of you feels the need, a hot water and a lick of soap.
Arya did not dare, even though she smelled as bad as Yoren by now, all sour and stinky. Some of the creatures living in her clothes had come all the way from Flea Bottom with her. It didn't seem right to drown them. Tarba and Hot Pie and the bull joined the line of men headed for the tubs. Others settled down in front of the bathhouse. The rest crowded into the common room. Yoren even sent Lummy out with tankards for the three in fetters, who had been left chained up in the back of their wagon. Washed and unwashed alike, supped on hot pork pies and baked apples. The innkeeper gave them a round of beer on the house.
I had a brother took the black years ago. Serving boy, clever, but one day he got seen filching pepper for my lord's table. He liked the taste of it, is all. Just a pinch of pepper, but Sir Malcolm was a hard man. You get pepper on the wall?
When Yoren shook his head, the man sighed.
Shame. Link love that pepper.
Arya sipped at her tankard cautiously, between spoonfuls of pie still warm from the oven. Her father sometimes let them have a cup of beer, she remembered. Sansa used to make a face at the taste of it and say that wine was ever so much finer. But Arya had liked it well enough. It made her sad to think of Sansa and her father. The inn was full of people moving south, and the common room erupted in scorn when Yoren said they were travelling the other way.
You'll be back soon enough, the innkeeper vowed. There's no going north. Half the fields are burnt, and what folk are left are walled up inside their holdfasts. One bunch rides off at dawn, and another one shows up by dusk. That's nothing to us,
Yoren insisted stubbornly.
Tully of Lannister makes no matter. The watch takes no part.
Lord Tully is my grandfather, Arya thought. It mattered to her, but she chewed her lip and kept quiet, listening.
It's more than Lannister and Tully, the innkeeper said. There's wild men down from the Mountains of the Moon. Try telling them you take no part. And the Starks are in it too. The young lords come down, the dead and son.
Arya sat up straight, straining to hear. Did he mean Rob?
I heard the boy rides to battle on a wolf,
said a yellow-haired man with a tankard in his hand.
Fool's talk,
Yoren spat.
The man I heard it from, he saw it himself. A wolf big as a horse, he swore. Swearing don't make it true, Odd, the innkeeper said. You keep swearing, you'll pay what you owe me, and I've yet to see a copper.
The common room erupted in laughter, and the man with the yellow hair turned red.
It's been a bad year for wolves, volunteered a sallow man in a travel-stained green cloak. Around the guard's eye, the packs have grown bolder than anyone can remember. Sheep, cows, dogs, makes no difference. They kill as they like, and they got no fear of men. It's worth your life to go in those woods by night. Ah, that's more tales, and no more true than the other.
I heard the same thing from my cousin, and she's not the sort to lie,
an old woman said.
She says there's this great pack, hundreds of them, man-killers. The one that leads them is a she-wolf, a bitch from the seventh hell.
A she-wolf? Arya sloshed her beer, wondering. Was the guard's eye near the Trident? She wished she had a map. It had been near the Trident that she'd left Nymeria. She hadn't wanted to, but Jory said they had no choice. That if the wolf came back with them, she'd be killed for biting Joffrey, even though he deserved it. They'd had to shout and scream and throw stones, and it wasn't until a few of Arya's stones struck home that the direwolf had finally stopped following them. She probably wouldn't even know me now, Arya thought, or if she did, she'd hate me. The man in the green cloak said,
I heard how this hell bitch walked into a village one day, a market day, people everywhere, and she walks in, bold as you please, and tears a baby from its mother's arms. When the tale reached Lord Mouton, him and his son swore they'd put an end to her. They tracked her to a lair with a pack of wolfhounds and barely escaped with their skins. Not one of those dogs came back. Not one.
That's just a story, Arya blurted out before she could stop herself. Wolves don't eat babies.
And what would you know about it, lad?
Asked the man in the green cloak. Before she could think of an answer, Yoren had her by the arm.
The boy's green sick on beer. That's all it is.
No, I'm not. They don't eat babies.
Outside, boy. And see that you stay there until you learn to shut your mouth when men are talking.
He gave her a stiff shove towards a side door that led back to the stables.
Go on now. See that the stable boy has watered our horses.
Arya went outside, stiff with fury. They don't, she muttered, kicking at a rock as she stalked off. It went rolling and fetched up under the wagons. Boy, a friendly voice called out. Lovely boy. One of the men in irons was talking to her. Wearily, Arya approached the wagon, one hand on needle's hilt. The prisoner lifted an empty tankard, his chains rattling. A man could use another taste of beer. A man has a thirst, wearing these heavy bracelets. He was the youngest of the three, slender, fine-featured, always smiling. His hair was red on one side and white on the other, all matted and filthy from cage and travel. A man could use a bath too, he said, when he saw the way Arya was looking at him. A boy could make a friend. I have friends, Arya said.
None I can see,
said the one without a nose. He was squat and thick, with huge hands. Black hair covered his arms and legs and chest, even his back. He reminded Arya of a drawing she had once seen in a book, of an ape from the Summer Isles. The hole in his face made it hard to look at him for long. The bald one opened his mouth and hissed like some immense white lizard. When Arya flinched back, startled, he opened his mouth wide and waggled his tongue at her. Only it was more of a stump than a tongue. Stop that, she blurted. A man does not choose his companions in the black cells, the handsome one with the red and white hair said. Something about the way he talked reminded her of Syria. It was the same, yet different too. These two, they have no courtesy. A man must ask forgiveness. You are called Arry, is that not so?
Lumpy head,
said the noseless one.
Lumpy head, lumpy face, sick boy. Have a care, Loweth. He'll hit you with his stick.
A man must be ashamed of the company he keeps, Arry, the handsome one said. This man has the honor to be Jaqen H'ghar, once of the Free City of Loreth. Would that he were home. This man's ill-bred companions in captivity are named Rorg. He waved his tankard at the noseless man, and Biter. Biter hissed at her again, displaying a mouthful of yellowed teeth filed into points. A man must have some name. Is that not so? Biter cannot speak, and Biter cannot write. Yet his teeth are very sharp, so a man calls him Biter, and he smiles. Are you charmed? Arya backed away from the wagon. No. They can't hurt me, she told herself. They're all chained up. He turned his tankard upside down. A man must weep. Rorg, the noseless one, flung his drinking cup at her with a curse. His manacles made him clumsy, yet even so, he would have sent the heavy pewter tankard crashing into her head if Arya hadn't leapt aside. You get us some beer, pimple, now! You shut your mouth, Arya tried to think what Sirio would have done. She drew her wooden practice sword. Come closer, Rorg said. I'll shove that stick up your bunghole and fuck you bloody. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Arya made herself approach the wagon. Every step was harder than the one before. Fierce as a wolverine, calm as still water. The words sang in her head. Sirio would not have been afraid. She was almost close enough to touch the wheel when Biter lurched to his feet and grabbed for her, his irons clanking and rattling. The manacles brought his hands up short, half a foot from her face. He hissed. She hit him, hard, right between his little eyes. Screaming, Biter reeled back and then threw all his weight against his chains. The link slithered and turned and grew taut. And Arya heard the creak of old dry wood as the great iron rings strained against the floorboards of the wagon. Huge, pale hands groped for her, while veins bulged along Biter's arms. But the bonds held, and finally the man collapsed backward. Blood ran from the weeping sores on his cheeks. A boy has more courage than sense, the one who named himself Jaqen H'ghar observed. Arya edged backwards away from the wagon. When she felt the hand on her shoulder, she whirled, bringing up her stick sword again. But it was only the bull. What are you doing? He raised his hands defensively. Yawen said none of us should go near those three. They don't scare me, Arya said. Then you're stupid. They scare me. The bull's hand fell to the hilt of his sword, and Rorg began to laugh. Let's get away from them. Arya scuffed at the ground with her foot, but she let the bull lead her around to the front of the inn. Rorg's laughter and Biter's hissing followed them. Want to fight? She asked the bull. She wanted to hit something. He blinked at her, startled. Strands of thick black hair, still wet from the bathhouse, fell across his deep blue eyes.
I'd hurt you.
You would not?
You don't know how strong I am.
You don't know how quick I am.
You're asking for it, Harry. He drew Praed's longsword. This is cheap steel, but it's a real sword.
Arya unsheathed needle. This is good steel, so it's realer than yours. The bull shook his head.
Promise not to cry if I'll cut you.
I'll promise if you will. She turned sideways into a water dancer's stance, but the bull did not move. He was looking at something behind her. What's wrong?
Gold cloaks.
His face closed up tight.
It couldn't be, Arya thought.
But when she glanced back, they were riding up the King's Road, six in the black ringmail and gold cloaks of the city watch. One was an officer. He wore a black enamel breastplate ornamented with four golden discs. They drew up in front of the inn.
Look with your eyes,
Sirio's voice seemed to whisper. Her eyes saw white leather under their saddles. The horses had been ridden long and hard. Calm as still water, She took the bull by the arm and drew him back behind a tall flowering hedge.
"What is it?" he asked. "What are you doing? Let go."
"Quiet as a shadow," she whispered, pulling him down.
Some of Yoren's other charges were sitting in front of the bathhouse, waiting their turn at the tub.
"You men," one of the gold cloaks shouted. "You the ones left to take the black?"
"We might be," came the cautious answer.
"We'd rather join you boys," Olrason said. "We hear it's cold on that wall."
The gold cloak officer dismounted.
"I have a warrant for a certain boy."
Yoren stepped out of the inn, fingering his tangled black beard.
"Who is it wants this boy?"
The other gold cloaks were dismounting to stand beside their horses.
"Why are we hiding?" the bull whispered. "It's me they want," Arya whispered back. His ear smelled of soap. "You be quiet."
"The queen wants him, old man. Not that it's your concern," the officer said, drawing a ribbon from his belt. "Here, her grace's seal and warrant."
Behind the hedge, the bull shook his head doubtfully.
"Why would the queen want you, Harry?"
She punched his shoulder.
"Be quiet."
Yoren fingered the warrant ribbon with its blob of golden wax.
"Pretty,"
he spit.
"Thing is, the boys in the night's watch now. What he done back in the city don't mean piss all."
The queen's not interested in your views, old man, and neither am I," the officer said. "I'll have the boy."
Arya thought about running, but she knew she couldn't get far in her donkey when the gold cloaks had horses, and she was so tired of running. She'd run when Samerin came for her, and again when they killed her father. If she was a real water dancer, she would go out there with Needle and kill all of them, and never run from anyone ever again.
"You'll have no one,"
Yoren said stubbornly.
"There's laws on such things."
The gold cloak drew a short sword.
"Here's your law."
Yoren looked at the blade.
"That's no law, just a sword. Happens I got one too."
The officer smiled.
"Old fool, I have 5 men with me."
Yoren spat.
"Happens I got 30.
The gold cloak laughed.
"This lot,"
said a big lout with a broken nose.
"Who's first?"
he shouted, showing his steel. Taba plucked a pitchfork out of a bale of hay.
"I am."
"No, I am," cried Cutjack, the plump stonemason, pulling his hammer off the leather apron he always wore.
"Me?"
Kurtz came up off the ground with his skinning knife in hand.
"Me and him,"
Cuss strung his longbow.
"All of us,"
said Rayson, snatching up the tall hardwood walking staff he carried. Dubba stepped naked out of the bathhouse with his clothes in a bundle, saw what was happening, and dropped everything but his dagger.
"Is it a fight?" he asked.
"I guess," said Hotpie, scrambling on all fours for a big rock to throw.
Arya could not believe what she was seeing. She hated Hotpie. Why would he risk himself for her? The one with the broken nose still thought it was funny.
"You girls put away them rocks and sticks before you get spanked. None of you knows what end of a sword to hold."
"I do."
Arya wouldn't let them die for her like Syrio. She wouldn't. Shoving through the hedge with Needle in hand, she slid into a water dancer's stance. Broken Nose guffawed. The officer looked her up and down.
"Put the blade away, little girl. No one wants to hurt you."
"I'm not a girl," she yelled, furious. What was wrong with them? They rode all this way for her, and here she was, and there they were, just smiling at her.
"I'm the one you want.
"He is the one we want." The officer jabbed his short sword toward the bull, who'd come forward to stand beside her, Praed's cheap steel in his hand. But it was a mistake to take his eyes off Yoren, even for an instant. Quick as that, the Black Brother's sword was pressed to the apple of the officer's throat.
"Neither's the one you get, lest you want me to see if your apple's ripe yet. I got me 10, 15 more brothers in that inn, if you still need convincing. I was you, I'd let loose of that gut-cutter, spread my cheeks over that fat little horse, and gallop on back to the city. He spat and poked harder with the point of his sword. Now!
The officer's fingers uncurled. His sword fell in the dust.
We'll just keep that, Yorin said. Good steel's always needed on the wall.
As you say, for now. Men?
The gold cloak sheathed and mounted up.
You'd best scamper up to that wall of yours in a hurry, old man. The next time I catch you, I believe I'll have your head to go with the bastard boys.
Better men than you have tried.
Yorin slapped the rump of the officer's horse with the flat of his sword and sent him reeling off down the King's Road. His men followed. When they were out of sight, Hot Pie began to whoop. But Yorin looked angrier than ever.
Fool! You think he's done with this? Next time, he won't prance up and hand me no damn ribbon. Get the rest out of them baths. We need to be moving. Ride all night. Maybe we can stay ahead of them for a bit.
He scooped up the short sword the officer had dropped.
Who wants this?
Me!
Hot Pie yelled.
Don't be using it on Harry.
He handed the boy the sword hilt first and walked over to Arya, but it was the bull he spoke to.
Queen wants you bad, boy.
Arya was lost. Why should she want him? The bull scowled at her.
Why should she want you? You're nothing but a little gutter rat.
Well, you're nothing but a bastard boy. Or maybe he was only pretending to be a bastard boy. What's your true name?
Gendry, he said, like he wasn't quite sure.
Don't see why no one wants neither of you, Yorin said. But they can't have you regardless. You ride them two courses. First sight of a gold cloak, make for the wall like a dragon's on your tail. The rest of us don't mean spit to them.
Except for you, Arya pointed out. That man said he'd take your head too.
Well, as to that, Yorin said, if he can get it off my shoulders, he's welcome to it.
John.
Sam,
John called softly. The air smelled of paper and dust and years. Before him, tall wooden shelves rose up into dimness, crammed with leather-bound books and bins of ancient scrolls. A faint yellow glow filtered through the stacks from some hidden lamp. John blew out the taper he carried, preferring not to risk an open flame amid so much old dry paper. Instead, he followed the light, wending his way down the narrow aisles beneath barrow-vaulted ceilings. All in black, he was a shadow among shadows. Dark of hair, long of face, grey of eye. Black moleskin gloves covered his hands, the right because it was burned, the left because a man felt half a fool wearing only one glove. Samwell Tarly sat hunched over a table in a niche carved into the stone of the wall. The glow came from the lamp hung above his head. He looked up at the sound of John's steps. Have you been here all night?
Have I?
Sam looked startled. You didn't break your fast with us, and your bed hadn't been slept in. Rast suggested that maybe Sam had deserted, but John never believed it. Desertion required its own sort of courage, and Sam had little enough of that.
Is it morning? Down here, there's no way to know.
Sam, you're a sweet fool, John said. You'll miss that bed when we're sleeping on the cold, hard ground, I promise you. Sam yawned.
Maester Aemond sent me to find maps for the Lord Commander. I never thought.
John, the books. Have you ever seen their like? There are thousands.
He gazed about him. The library at Winterfell has more than 100. Did you find the maps?
Oh, yes. Sam's hand swept over the table, fingers plump as sausages, indicating the clutter of books and scrolls before him. A dozen, at the least. He unfolded a square of parchment. The paint has faded, but you can see where the map maker marked the sites of wildling villages. And there's another book. Where is it now? I was reading it a moment ago. He shoved some scrolls aside to reveal a dusty volume bound in rotted leather. This, he said reverently, is the account of a journey from the Shadow Tower all the way to Lorne Point on the frozen shore, written by a ranger named Redwine. It's not dated, but he mentions a Dorin Stark as King of the North. So it must be from before the conquest. John, they fought giants. Redwine even traded with the Children of the Forest. It's all here.
Ever so delicately, he turned pages with a finger.
He drew maps as well, see?
Maybe you could write an account of our ranging, Sam. He'd meant to sound encouraging, but it was the wrong thing to say. The last thing Sam needed was to be reminded of what faced them on the morrow. He shuffled the scrolls about aimlessly.
There's more maps, if I had time to search. Everything's a jumble. I could set it all to order, though. I know I could. But it would take time. Well, years, in truth.
Mormont wanted those maps a little sooner than that. John plucked a scroll from a bin, blew off the worst of the dust. A corner flaked off between his fingers as he unrolled it. Look, this one is crumbling, he said, frowning over the faded script.
Be gentle.
Sam came around the table and took the scroll from his hand, holding it as if it were a wounded animal.
The important books used to be copied over when they needed them. Some of the oldest have been copied 50 times, probably.
Well, don't bother copying that one.
23 barrels of pickled cod, 18 jars of fish oil, a cask of salt. An inventory, Sam said, or perhaps a bill of sale. Who cares how much pickled cod they ate 600 years ago?
John wondered.
I would. Sam carefully replaced the scroll in the bin from which John had plucked it. You can learn so much from ledgers like that. Truly you can. It can tell you how many men were in the Night's Watch then, how they lived, what they ate.
They ate food, John said, and they lived as we live.
You'd be surprised. This vault is a treasure, John.
Well, if you say so. John was doubtful. Treasure meant gold, silver, and jewels, not dust, spiders, and rotting leather.
I do,
the fat boy blurted. He was older than John, a man grown by law. But it was hard to think of him as anything but a boy.
I found drawings of the faces in the trees and a book about the tongue of the Children of the Forest. Works that even the Citadel doesn't have. Scrolls from old Valyria. Counts of the seasons written by maesters dead 1,000 years.
The books will still be here when we return.
If we return.
The old bear is taking 200 seasoned men, 3/4 of them rangers. Corran Halfhand will be bringing another 100 brothers from the Shadow Tower. You'll be as safe as if you were back in your Lord Father's castle at Horn Hill. Samuel Tarley managed a sad little smile.
I was never very safe in my father's castle either.
The guards play cruel jests, John thought. Pip and Toad, all a lather to be part of the great ranging, were to remain at Castle Black. It was Samuel Tarley, the self-proclaimed coward, grossly fat, timid, and near as bad a rider as he was with a sword, who must face the haunted forest. The old bear was taking 2 cages of ravens, so they might send back word as they went. Maester Aemon was blind and far too frail to ride with them, so his steward must go in his place. We need you for the ravens, Sam, and someone has to help me keep Gren humble. Sam's chins quivered.
You could care for the ravens, or Grancord, or anyone, he said with a thin edge of desperation in his voice. I could show you how. You know your letters, too. You could write down Lord Mormont's messages as well as I.
I'm the old bear steward. I'll need to squire for him, tend his horse, set up his tent. I won't have time to watch over birds as well. Sam, you said the words. You're a brother of the Night's Watch now.
A brother of the Night's Watch shouldn't be so scared.
We're all scared. We'd be fools if we weren't. Too many rangers had been lost the past 2 years, even Benjen Stark, John's uncle. They had found two of his uncle's men in the wood, slain, but the corpses had risen in the chill of night. John's burnt fingers twitched as he remembered. He still saw the white in his dreams, dead Uther with the burning blue eyes and the coal black hands, but that was the last thing Sam needed to be reminded of. There's no shame in fear, my father told me. What matters is how we face it. Come, I'll help you gather up the maps. Sam nodded unhappily. The shells were so closely spaced that they had to walk single file as they left. The vault opened into one of the tunnels the brothers called the Worm Walks, winding subterranean passages that linked the keeps and towers of Castle Black under the earth. In summer, the Worm Walks were seldom used, save by rats and other vermin. But winter was a different matter. When the snows drifted 40 and 50 feet high, and the ice winds came howling out of the north, the tunnels were all that held Castle Black together. Soon, John thought, as they climbed. He'd seen the harbinger that had come to Maester Aemon with word of summer's end. The great raven of the citadel, white and silent as ghost. He had seen a winter once, when he was very young, but everyone agreed that it had been a short one and mild. This one would be different. He could feel it in his bones. The steep stone steps had Sam puffing like a blacksmith's bellows by the time they reached the surface. They emerged into a brisk wind that made John's cloak swirl and snap. Ghost was stretched out asleep beneath the wattle-and daub wall of the granary, but he woke when John appeared, bushy white tail held stiffly upright as he trotted to them. Sam squinted up at the wall. It loomed above them, an icy cliff 700 feet high. Sometimes it seemed to John almost a living thing, with moods of its own. The color of the ice was wont to change with every shift of the light. Now it was the deep blue of frozen rivers, now the dirty white of old snow, and when a cloud passed before the sun, it darkened to the pale gray of pitted stone. The wall stretched east and west as far as the eye could see, so huge that it shrunk the timbered keeps and stone towers of the castle to insignificance. It was the end of the world. And we are going beyond it. The morning sky was streaked by thin gray clouds, but the pale red line was there behind them. The Black Brothers had dubbed the Wanderer Mormont's Torch, saying, only half in jest, that the gods must have sent it to light the old man's way through the haunted forest.
The comet's so bright you can see it by day now, Sam said, shading his eyes with a fistful of books.
Never mind about comets. It's maps the old bear wants. Ghost loped ahead of them. The ground seemed deserted this morning, with so many rangers off at the brothel in Molestown, digging for buried treasure and drinking themselves blind. Gren had gone with them. Pip and Haldren Toad had offered to buy him his first woman to celebrate his first ranging. They wanted John and Sam to come as well, but Sam was almost as frightened of whores as he was of the haunted forest, and John wanted no part of it. Do what you want, he told Toad. I took a vow. As they passed the sept, he heard voices raised in song. Some men want whores on the eve of battle, and some want guards. John wondered who felt better afterwards. The sept tempted him no more than the brothel.
His own guards kept their temples in the wild places, where the weirwood spread their bone-white branches. The seven have no power beyond the wall, he thought, but my guards will be waiting. Outside the armory, Sir Andrew Tarth was working with some raw recruits. They'd come in last night with Conwy, one of the wandering crows who roam the Seven Kingdoms, collecting men for the wall. This new crop consisted of a grey beard leaning on a staff, two blond boys with the look of brothers, a foppish youth in soiled satin, a raggy man with a club foot, and some grinning loon who must have fancied himself a warrior. Sir Andrew was showing him the error of that presumption. He was a gentler master at arms than Sir Alistair Thorne had been, but his lessons would still raise bruises. Sam winced at every blow, but Jon Snow watched the sword play closely.
"What do you make of them, Snow?"
Donald Noy stood in the door of his armory, bare-chested under a leather apron, the stump of his left arm uncovered for once. With his big gut and barrel chest, his flat nose and bristly black jaw, Noy did not make a pretty sight. But he was a welcome one, nonetheless. The armorer had proved himself a good friend. "They smell of summer," John said, as Sir Andrew bull-rushed his foe and knocked him sprawling. "Where did Conwy find them?"
"A lord's dungeon near Gulltown," the smith replied. "A brigand, a barber, a beggar, two orphans, and a boy whore. With such do we defend the realms of men."
"They'll do," John gave Sam a private smile. "We did." Noy drew him closer.
"You've heard these tidings of your brother?"
"Last night, Conwy and his charges had brought the news north with them, and the talk in the common room had been of little else. John was still not certain how he felt about it. Rob, a king, the brother he'd played with, fought with, shared his first cup of wine with, but not mother's milk, no. So now Rob will sip summer wine from jeweled goblets, while I'm kneeling beside some stream, sucking snow melt from cupped hands. Rob will make a good king, he said loyally.
Will he now? The smith eyed him frankly. I hope that's so, boy, but once I might have said the same of Robert.
They say you forged his warhammer, John remembered.
I was his man, a Baratheon man, smith and armorer at Storm's End until I lost the arm. I'm old enough to remember Lord Stepfren before the sea took him, and I knew those three sons of his since they got their names. I tell you this, Robert was never the same after he put on that crown. Some men are like swords, made for fighting. Hang them up, and they go to rust.
And his brothers? John asked. The armorer considered that a moment.
Robert was a true steel. Annis is pure iron, black and hard and strong, yes, but brittle the way iron gets. He'll break before he bends. And Renly, that one, he's copper, bright and shiny, pretty to look at, but not worth all that much at the end of the day.
And what metal is Rob? John did not ask. Noy was a Baratheon man. Likely he thought Joffrey the lawful king and Rob a traitor. Among the Brotherhood of the Night's Watch, there was an unspoken pact never to probe too deeply into such matters. Men came to the war from all of the Seven Kingdoms, and old loves and loyalties were not easily forgotten, no matter how many oaths a man swore, as John himself had good reason to know. Even Sam, his father's house was sworn to Highgarden, whose Lord Tyrell supported King Renly. Best not to talk of such things. The Night's Watch took no sides. Lord Mormont awaits us, John said.
He won't keep you from the old bear.
Noy clapped him on the shoulder and smiled.
May the gods go with you on the morrow, Snow. You bring back that uncle of yours. Do you hear?
We will, John promised him. Lord Commander Mormont had taken up residence in the King's Tower after the fire had gutted his own. John left Ghost with the guards outside the door.
More stairs, said Sam miserably as they started up. I hate stairs.
Well, that's one thing we won't face in the wood. When they entered the solar, the raven spied them at once.
Snow!
The bird shrieked. Mormon broke off his conversation.
Took you long enough with those maps?
He pushed the remains of breakfast out of the way to make room on the table.
Put them here. I'll have a look at them later.
Thoron Smallwood, a sinewy ranger with a weak chin and a weaker mouth hidden under a thin straggle of beard, gave John and Sam a cool look. He had been one of Alistair
If you are ever Lord Commander, you may do as you please, Mormont told the ranger. But it seems to me that I've not died yet, nor have the brothers put you in my place.
I'm First Ranger now, with Ben Stark lost and Sir Jeremy killed, Smallwood said stubbornly. The command should be mine.
Mormont would have none of it. I sent out Ben Stark and Sir Waymar before him. I do not mean to send you after them and sit wondering how long I must wait before I give you up for lost as well.
He pointed.
And Stark remains First Ranger until we know for a certainty that he is dead. Should that day come, it will be me who names his successor, not you. I'll stop wasting my time. We ride at first light, or have you forgotten?
Smallwood pushed to his feet.
As my lord commands.
On the way out, he frowned at John, as if it were somehow his fault.
First Ranger? The old bear's eyes lighted on Sam. I'd sooner name you First Ranger. He has the effrontery to tell me to my face that I'm too old to ride with him. Do I look old to you, boy?
The hair that had retreated from Mormont's spotted scalp had regrouped beneath his chin in a shaggy grey beard that covered much of his chest. He thumped it hard.
Do I look frail?
Sam opened his mouth, gave a little squeak. The old bear terrified him.
No, my lord, John offered quickly. You look strong as a...
Don't cuss at me, Snow. You know I won't have it. Let me have a look at these maps.
Mormont pored through them brusquely, giving each one no more than a glance and a grunt.
Was this all you could find?
My lord, Sam stammered. There were more, but the disorder...
These are old,
Mormont complained, and his ravens echoed him with a sharp cry of,
Old! Old!
The villagers may come and go, but the hills and rivers will be in the same places, John pointed out.
True enough. Have you chosen your ravens yet, Tarly?
Master Aemon means to pick them come evenfall after the feeding.
I'll have his best, smart birds, and strong. Strong,
his own bird said, preening.
Strong, strong. If it happens that we're all butchered out there, I mean for my successor to know where and how we died.
Talk of butchery reduced Samuel Tarly to speechlessness. Mormont leaned forward.
Tarly, when I was a lad, half your age, my lady mother told me that if I stood about with my mouth open, a weasel was like to mistake it for his lair and run down my throat. If you have something to say, say it. Otherwise, beware of weasels.
He waved a brusque dismissal.
Off with you. I'm too busy for folly. No doubt the maester has some work you can do.
Sam swallowed, stepped back, and scurried out so quickly he almost tripped over the rushes.
Is that boy as big a fool as he seems?
The Lord Commander asked when he'd gone.
Fool!
The raven complained. Mormont did not wait for John's reply.
His lord father stands high in King Renly's councils, and I had half a notion to dispatch him. No, best not. Renly is not like to heed a quaking fat boy. I'll send Sir Arnel. He's a deal steadier, and his mother was one of the green apple phosphates.
If it please my lord,
what would you have of King Renly? Same things I'd have of all of them, lad. Men, horses, swords, armor, grain, cheese, wine, wool, nails. The Night's Watch is not proud. We take what is offered.
His fingers drummed against the rough-hewn planks of the table.
If the winds have been kind, Sir Alistair should reach King's Landing by the turn of the moon. But whether this boy Joffrey will pay him any heed, I do not know. House Lannister has never been a friend to the Watch.
Thorn has the White's Hand to show them. A grisly, pale thing, with black fingers it was, that twitched and stirred in its jar as if it was still alive.
Would that we had another hand to send to Renly.
Dywin says you can find anything beyond the wall.
Aye, Dywin says.
The last time he went ranging, he said he saw a bear 15 feet tall.
Mormont snorted. My sister is said to have taken a bear for a lover. I'd believe that before I believe one 15 feet tall. Though in a world where dead come walking... Even so, a man must believe his eyes. I have seen the dead walk. I've not seen any giant bears.
He gave John a long, searching look.
But we were speaking of hands, hmm? How's yours?
Better. John peeled off his moleskin glove and showed him. Scars covered his arm halfway to the elbow, and the mottled pink flesh still felt tight and tender. But it was healing.
It itches, though. Maester Aemon says that's good. He gave me a salve to take with me when we ride. You can wield Longclaw, despite the pain?
Well enough. John flexed his fingers, opening and closing the fist the way the maester had shown him. I am to work the fingers every day to keep them nimble, as Maester Aemon said.
Blind he may be, but Aemon knows what he's about. I pray the gods let us keep him another 20 years. Do you know that he might have been king?
John was taken by surprise.
He told me his father was king, but not, I thought him perhaps, a younger son. So he was. His father's father was Daeron Targaryen, the second of his name, who brought Dorn into the realm. Part of the pact was that he wed a Dornish princess. She gave him 4 sons. Aemon's father, Maekar, was the youngest of those, and Aemon was his 3rd son. Mind you, all this happened long before I was born, ancient as Smallwood would make me.
Maester Aemon was named for the Dragon Knight?
So he was. Some say Prince Aemon was King Daeron's true father, not Aegon the Unworthy. Be that as it may, our Aemon lacked the Dragon Knight's martial nature. He likes to say he had a slow sword but quick wits. Small wonder his grandfather packed him off to the Citadel. He was 9 or 10, I believe, and 9th or 10th in the line of succession as well.
Maester Aemon had counted more than 100 name days, John knew. Frail, shrunken, wizened and blind, it was hard to imagine him as a little boy, no older than Arya. Mormont continued,
Aemon was at his books when the eldest of his uncles, the heir apparent, was slain in a tawny mishap. He left 2 sons, but they followed him to the grave not long after, during the great spring sickness. King Daeron was also taken. So the crown passed to Daeron's 2nd son, Aerys.
The Mad King? John was confused. Aerys had been king before Robert. That wasn't so long ago.
No, this was Aerys the First. The one Robert deposed was the 2nd of that name.
How long ago was this?
Oh, 80 years, or close enough, the old bear said. And no, I still hadn't been born, although Aemon had forged 6 links of his maester's chain by then. Aerys wed his own sister, as the Targaryens were wont to do, and reigned for 10 or 12 years. Aemon took his vows and left the Citadel to serve at some lordling's court until his royal uncle died without issue. The Iron Throne passed to the last of King Daeron's 4 sons. That was Maekar, Aemon's father. The new king summoned all his sons to court
and would have made Aemon part of his council, but he refused, saying that he would usurp the place rightly belonging to the Grand Maester. Instead, he served at the keep of his eldest brother, another Daron. Well, that one died too, leaving only a feeble-witted daughter as heir, some pox he caught from the whore, I believe. The next brother was Arian. Arian the Monstrous? John knew that name. The prince who thought he was a dragon was one of old Nan's more gruesome tales. His little brother Bran had loved it. The very one, though he named himself Arian Brightflame. One night, in his cups, he drank a jar of wildfire, after telling his friends it would transform him into a dragon. But the gods were kind, and it transformed him into a corpse. Not quite a year after, King Maker died in a battle against an outlaw lord.
John was not entirely innocent of the history of the realm. His own maester had seen to that. That was the year of the Great Council, he said. The lords passed over Prince Arian's infant son and Prince Daron's daughter and gave the crown to Aegon.
Yes and no. First, they offered it quietly to Aemon, and quietly he refused. The gods meant for him to serve, not to rule, he told them. He had sworn a vow and would not break it, though the High Septon himself offered to absolve him. Well, no sane man wanted any blood of Arian's on the throne, and Daron's girl was a lackwit besides being female, so they had no choice but to turn to Aemon's younger brother, Aegon, the fifth of his name. Aegon the Unlikely, they called him, born the fourth son of a fourth son. Aemon knew, and rightly, that if he remained at court, those who disliked his brother's rule would seek to use him. So he came to the wall. And here he has remained, while his brother and his brother's son and his son each reigned and died in turn, until Jaime Lannister put an end to the line of the Dragon Kings.
King,
croaked the raven. The bird flapped across the solar to land on Mormont's shoulder.
King,
it said again, strutting back and forth. He likes that word, John said, smiling.
An easy word to say. An easy word to like.
King,
the bird said again. I think he means for you to have a crown, my lord.
The realm has three kings already, and that's too many for my liking.
Mormont stroked the raven under the beak with a finger, but all the while his eyes never left Jon Snow. It made him feel odd. My lord, why have you told me this about Maester Aemon?
Must I have a reason?
Mormont shifted in his seat, frowning.
Your brother Rob has been crowned king in the north. You and Aemon have that in common, a king for a brother.
And this too, said John, a vow. The old bear gave a loud snort, and the raven took flight, flapping in a circle about the room.
Give me a man for every vow I've seen broken, and the wall will never lack for defenders.
I've always known that Rob would be lord of Winterfell. Mormont gave a whistle, and the bird flew to him again and settled on his arm.
A lord's one thing, king's another.
He offered the raven a handful of corn from his pocket.
They will garb your brother Rob in silks, satins, and velvets of 100 different colors while you live and die in black ringmail. He will wed some beautiful princess and father sons on her. You'll have no wife, nor will you ever hold a child of your own blood in your arms. Rob will rule, you will serve. Men will call you a crow. Him they'll call your grace. Singers will praise every little thing he does, while your grace's deeds all go unsung. Tell me that none of this troubles you, John, and I'll name you a liar. And now I have the truth of it.
John drew himself up, taut as a bowstring. And if it did trouble me, what might I do, bastard as I am?
What will you do? Mormont asked. Bastard as you are.